I'm going to tell you a story. It's a story about public health, a story about data to action, and a story about how to achieve success. My name is Rajiv Das from the University of Florida Family Data Center. And the title of my talk is Data to Action, Using GIS to Improve Community Health and Planning. I hope this presentation proves useful. In every community, there are underserved neighborhoods and distressed populations. This is not a natural human condition. You know, there are external or internal pressures that perpetuate this problem. So how do you deal with intergenerational poverty, distressed neighborhoods? How do you become part of the process to change the status quo? How do you use data? And how do you ultimately improve the health of neighborhoods suffering the greatest disparities? That is the story of this presentation. So when we began this work, we didn't conduct a literature review or start with a logic model. I did that after the fact and actually in preparation for this presentation. But I was a little surprised with what I found. You know, public health does a very good job of describing populations and conducting needs assessments, doing HIA. But when it comes to acting on this data, actually academics don't do a very good job of taking the next step. And it's hard to find in the literature the whole process. And that's what I hope to share today. And this is what Nikki Farouk found from a health maps perspective and from a data perspective. So he concludes that data indicator projects have largely failed to achieve changes in community outcomes. That's not to say there are that there aren't models. There are actually quite a few, but that's from an intervention perspective. And one example of that is the Communities That Care framework. The Communities That Care framework uses GIS and it uses HIA and needs assessments. It uses data, but it crucially assumes that you're organized and that you have funds for a CTC manager. I mean, if you go to their website, step one says hire a full-time Communities That Care manager and coordinator. Well, what if you're not to step one? What if you start at zero? You know, that's where we started from. And so we started with the following premises, that health occurs over the course of life, and that social determinants of health play an important role in community distress, and it can be observed in data. So that led to our hypothesis that data, when focused strategically as maps, can catalyze change in distressed neighborhoods. So how do we do that? Well, starting with data, we built relationships with data owners. We secured permissions. Institutional review board approvals, we executed data sharing agreements while maintaining HIPAA and FERPA compliance to protect patient confidentiality. We linked these separate data sets together, and what we ended up with was a life course database. The top panel shows our data, the databases that we linked, and the bottom panel shows example data contents. So for example, you could link Healthy Start prenatal screens to birth certificates, to early intervention, to education, to DCF, to juvenile justice. All of that sits on the substrate of health, hospital inpatient, outpatient, emergency records, and Medicaid claims. And all of that occurs over the built environment and over time. So for example, in the Healthy Start survey, you can determine adequacy of prenatal care. On the birth certificate, you can determine good or bad birth health outcome. Early intervention, you can determine developmental delay status, and so on. So what does this data look like in a data warehouse? This is the blueprint. This is what it looks like. Everything is linked to this central core. This central core is the mother-infant dyad. And this database represents over 20 years of data, over 6 million individuals, and nearly 400 million records statewide. So the next step was to geocode data when necessary to create local maps. We had statewide data, but we created local maps with density hotspots. And then we shared these maps with stakeholders. I'll explain what that sharing is in a minute, but I first want to show you what the maps look like. So this is Medicaid birth density. And I want to point out specific features of the map because, you know, it's rare to find hotspots maps like this in the literature or on the internet. Typically, you see maps like this for environmental data, not for human data. So specifically, these red lines are zip code boundaries. The black lines are census tracts. If you look at the Central West zip code 32607, this wealthy area to the west and the central hotspot would combine, and it would look very average if you were looking at zip code level data. So the point of this map is it's important to get to sub-zip code level information when you can. Another point is this map is made for community action. Also in the published literature, you'll find rates published. Rarely do you find these numbers represent actual counts. These are count data. And that's what community wraps its head around and can understand. If you go to an elected official and say the low birth weight rate of this hotspot community here is 15 per thousand or something, they don't understand. But you say there are 286 here, that's something meaningful and something you can take action on. Here's a second app, birth to teenagers. You start to see a pattern of that hotspots are matching up. Two more maps, domestic violence, child maltreatment. Again, the hotspots are matching up. I want to go back to the Medicaid birth density map. Why Medicaid birth density? Because it's a really, really good indicator of poverty, just general poverty. We don't have poverty data at the point level, but we do have this. And if you keep your eye on the biggest hotspot there, you'll see that it overlaps exactly with this mic zone. So this is 911 calls for service. And the sheriff allocates her deputies in equal numbers to each zone. So alpha zone at the top is this huge area, and there are approximately the same number of deputies patrolling that area as in this little 2.5 square mile area of mic zone. So now we know there's a confluence of conditions here of health inequity, of poverty, of crime, and we need to do something about that. So the next part of my talk is the description of what we did. We created the maps and started creating the maps in 2008. And in 2009, we got support to use the maps for advocacy and share it with community. And in 2010, there was kind of a tipping point where the community started to respond to these maps. One of the highlights of sharing maps is in the small community, we met with Juvenile Justice Secretary Wansley Walters, who was appointed by our governor. So even local data can make an impact at the state level. And I'll talk about the other outcomes as well. So action number one, we engaged community. At over 25 outings and over 1,100 individuals saw these maps. When I say community, I don't mean the general public. I mean these are social service agency heads. This is the president of United Way, elected officials, school board members, and so on. These are the people that can make a difference in our community because they're already doing it in our community. And we continued to share our maps after this meeting. Our maps are slated to be presented at future meetings. And it's nice to create a map and create a PDF, print it on a sheet of paper, send it by email, put it on a website. But as we discovered, what you really need to do is blow them up. And that's what we did. We put these maps on 3-foot by 4-foot, printed on foam core and placed on easels at all of these venues. And you know, it's old technology, it's not 21st century, but it actually works. It gets people, kind of like at this conference where you're networking, it gets people to talk to each other, generate ideas, and develop solutions. Action number two, the maps were directly responsible for the formation of this advocacy group, which is now a 501c3 nonprofit. And this is a combination of the faith community, it's the university, it's residents, it's social service agencies, it's child advocates, and that is a powerful force. Action number three, the maps were directly responsible for launching a local mobile clinic. In fiscal year 11-12, there were 5,000 primary care visits in this community. In comparison, Tampa, Florida is 3 to 4 times the size of this community, and one of their mobile clinics saw 4,000 patients. So we're very efficient at delivering services. Why are we efficient? Because the maps told us where to put the mobile clinic. The green stars represent where the mobile clinic stops, and you can see they hit almost every hotspot. This is the mobile clinic in action where providers are donating their services. Medical students deliver services, and it truly is a public-private partnership. Action number four is the building and opening of a neighborhood resource center. Thanks to the maps and the advocacy that resulted from this huge coalition, that the county allocated $225,000 to renovate a building. Private sources contributed $189,000, and the grand opening was just this summer, June 1st, 2012. This is a real physical building, a brick-and-mortar resource center in the center of that biggest hotspot that I showed you on the maps, delivering real services. If you build it, they will come. This is the schedule of activities for this month, and the text is a little small and hard to read, so I'll just list a few of the things that are offered. There is Girl Scouts homework help. There are GED classes. There is rebuilding for domestic violence survivors, and so on. If you build it, they will come. Right next to the Resource Center, this area is a food desert. It is a park desert. Right next to the Resource Center, the land was purchased by the County Commission. $31,000 of private donations enabled this park to be built. And it's now a community space that never existed in this neighborhood before. Action number six, there's outreach to elementary school kids. We teach science, technology, engineering, and math, the STEM curriculums, nutrition, and physical activity at six elementary schools to at-risk kids in after-school programs through the 21st Century Program. How do we know this is sustainable? We're completing our third year this December. We'll start our fourth year next spring. It's almost entirely volunteer-run and volunteer-based. We teach to state standards, and we pace after classroom learning. We have focus groups and pre- and post-tests of the kids and show, at least in the short term, that there are learning gains. Outcome number seven, right across the street from the Resource Center, this quadplex, this empty, abandoned building. Just 2 months ago, the County Commission approved $190,000 to renovate this building. It's going to be a local health department satellite clinic. It's slated to open next summer, 2013. Action number eight, we have developed a health and social determinants web portal. This is maps and data tables to support the maps to track and trend data over time. Because of a lack of resource, we're still working on it, that our goal is to get to sub-zip code level maps and data in real time for any community in Florida. And that we expect to be able to do that in 1 to 2 years. So my conclusions are that GIS absolutely contributed to the eight action outcomes that I just talked about. I submit to you two control groups. One is the other hotspots in the map that I shared with you, that no extraordinary interventions or preventions occurred in those other hotspots, just the one major hotspot, because that's where we concentrated our efforts. Control number two, we created maps for a totally different city in Florida. We didn't share them widely, and we didn't share them with anyone, but we kept our eyes and ears open, our personal networks open. We watched the popular press to see if there are any extraordinary outcomes that occurred in the hotspots that we identified that we didn't share with anyone, and nothing extraordinary happened. Data and maps galvanized our community to collaborate, to plan solutions, and it resulted in a reallocation of resources. You know, it's a New York Times columnist, David Brooks, says, it's not that America lacks resources, it's that they are misallocated. And that's exactly what happened here. None of these organizations, not the county commission, the service providers, got a grant, got an increase in funding. They just redirected their resources to be the most efficient as possible and result in these eight action outcomes. So my point is you can get from zero, start from zero, and get to solutions very quickly. And so my recommendations are that you build and sustain relationships, especially with the people you're trying to help, the residents. Bring them on as equal partners, not subordinates or guinea pigs. Engage broader community. You can't do it alone. You need a coalition, and it can be a very powerful force. Add value to the engagement. If you go out and do a process like this, bring something to the table, not just your credentials or expertise. What we brought was maps and data, and the community took ownership of it. I was getting emails from community agencies asking for copies of the maps to include with their annual reporting, to include with their future grant writing. So they were really using the data. And we became part of that movement. Even after our initial grant funding ended, we still engage community. We still go to the monthly meetings. And we also use maps as a marketing tool to bring in more community. So my story is one that starts with data and maps and ends with community action and delivery of real services. Innovation and creativity, in this example, were born from vulnerability, from distress, and from opportunity. Data was the catalyst. Maps were the engagement and marketing tools. And this talk is not about our accomplishments. My take-home message is the process highlighted in red on this slide, which resulted in meaningful change. You know, I told you a story. It was a story about public health, a story about data to action, a story about how to achieve success. And my motto is, you do whatever it takes. This is the Harlem Children's Zone, if you're familiar with that, and Jeffrey Canada's efforts. He wrote a book, Whatever It Takes. He's in the movie, Waiting for Superman, and he's been interviewed on NPR a couple times. And that's what we did. And this talk is really ultimately a call to action, and I hope that you have the courage to take this template or elements of what we've done and incorporate it into your work. Thank you.